Several years ago, I was very fortunate to be able to purchase a cabin, like a couple cabins on a lake. I have a garden, which I spent a lot of time in.
You have a real green thumb.
Thank you. I enjoy it. I mean, whether or not I'm good at it, I just enjoy doing it. I was getting really frustrated because I put in a fence to keep the woodchucks out, and I noticed that the plants were still being eaten. Different types of plants. So the woodchucks had stayed out. The next morning, sure enough, the plants, something was still eating them. And I sat out there one day looking out at the garden, and I saw the culprit, a little chipmunk. They're all over the yard, these chipmunks, and they were able, so I chased it out. I thought it had gotten stuck in there or maybe gone underneath the fence. And I ran over to the garden, and it squeezed its way out of one of the little tiny – I mean, these holes were like – God, it must have been a centimeter in diameter. I don't know how it got through there.
See, I would think the chipmunk would have more respect for you than that.
Right? Yeah.
You're Alvin.
Yeah. Thanks. As Alvin would say, I don't get no respect.
Oh, such a good Alvin impression.
Thanks. Well, you know.
You are Alvin.
Yeah.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your former chipmunk host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
And with me as always is Christian. You like chipmunks.
I would be, in our family structure, I would have been Theodore.
Uh-huh.
But I think I'm a bit more of a Simon.
Simon, yeah, you are now. When we were growing
up. But you're Alvin. You are Alvin.
I always identified more with Alvin when we were growing up.
You are very Alvin.
Yeah, kind of.
That could be a good new lightning round question.
Oh, favorite chipmunk?
What chipmunk you identify with? Because they're pretty different,
they
the
are.
Three of them.
They are.
I don't know if people are familiar enough with the different personalities, though.
I don't know who would identify with Theodore, really. I feel like he'd be the least popular.
Why? He's like cute and quiet.
Yeah, but and he's kind of like a little, is he dim? He's a little like, not dim, innocent. He's a real innocent.
He's like the Betty White.
Yes.
He's like the Rose.
I was just thinking that, yeah. You don't both have to think that Rose and Theodore have very similar characteristics. Yeah, Damien definitely would have been Simon when we
definitely.
Were growing up. Yeah, he was.
It's yeah, almost like that character was written for him.
Yeah. and, you know, they had offered not to, I don't know what this is. I was going to qualify it with like, sorry to brag, but they offered me Simon. This is how like
that's,
arrogant,
what is
I guess.
That? They believe it or not, they offered me a smaller part and I insisted on the lead.
I don't even know if I'd say Simon was a smaller part. I think they were
equally. It's Alvin and the Chipmunks.
I know it's called that, but in the movie, I think they were all pretty much the same size.
Doesn't matter. It's still Alvin and the Chipmunks. Alvin is the on the poster. He's the big one, and he's the lead.
Why are we talking about Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Because our guest today is an actor who appeared in three of the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies.
He's going to love this. He's going to love that this is
it's,
how we're
it's
introduced.
It's mostly what he's known for.
Yeah, no, that's not true. Our guest today is the brilliant comedian, one of my favorites, if not my favorite comedian, David Cross. God, was I excited when he agreed to do it. I've known David for a while, not through really Alvin movies, but I don't know how. I mean, we've both done
Chipmunk Nation?
Not Chipmunk Nation. No, in fact. You know, I never worked with him directly on those things. We would record separately. But I knew him through friends in New York. And we would do these plays called the 24-hour plays for the American Airlines Theater every couple of years. So, and I think we had done a play, one of those together. Anyway, I spent limited amount of time with him, but always so enjoyed being around him. He's so, as you imagine, he's just so naturally funny and perceptive and brilliant. I think so smart, just was such a, intimidatingly smart.
He's most known for, I would say, Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Show.
And Mr. Show with Bob and David, with his comedy partner, Bob Odenkirk.
Hopefully future guest of the show.
He'd be great.
I didn't tell David this because I didn't want to, you know, I was very so, I didn't want to gush too much. And you be the judge whether mm-hmm. or not I did. But when I was a young man, when I was in college, the thing I cared about more than anything was this sketch comedy group that I was in called Laughingstock. And it was the source of so much joy, so much fun. I just loved it. And our heroes, like my friends and I, we all really worshiped Mr. Show. That to me was like the – because SNL was fun. We of course, it was an institution. We loved that. That was a big inspiration. But there was something about Mr. Show that was like so subversive and – It was just like another level. It was
punk.
Like, it was punk. Truly. He's just incredibly intuitive and I really think brilliant. So I was excited to talk to him, and I hope you...
Because he has a new movie out, too, that we should mention here.
The Dark Divide. It is... we talk about it, and we will talk about it afterwards. It's about a naturalist who goes into the wild in search of... a certain type of butterfly, but really in search of himself.
That sounds hilarious.
No, it's actually not. It's not a comedy. It's closer to like a Jack London novel or Into the Wild or something like that. It's about self-discovery, and he looks incredible in it. He looks so good. I think he's a phenomenal actor. He doesn't get credit for all the time because of how funny he is. But my challenge was to not, as you say, Chris Farley him. Which is Christian always like advises me against.
Well, it's like the Chris Farley show on SNL. Yeah. He's like, remember when you said that thing yeah. that I found funny 15 years ago?
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, I remember it. Yeah, I wrote it and said it.
I had to really hold myself back because there's so
many. Well, I can't wait.
Okay,
all right. To hear whether you succeeded or not.
Okay, here we go. You can all be the judge of that, as Christian will be, when you hear my chat with the just beyond funny and bright David Cross.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
I see you shaved your beard a little bit. I was... excited to talk to you. You had a very intense beard earlier.
Yeah, that was the first thing I did when I rapped. I was like, this thing, I can bring it down. That was crazy. But that was, meant to be, and that was all real, obviously, no prosthetics, but that was all lost in the woods for, a couple months.
So you grew it for the character, because you're playing a naturalist, Dr. Pyle, and I got that just the story of the shooting it is so fascinating, but it's you were out in this wilderness. I had no idea there was such an expanse of wilderness.
Oh, nor did I. I didn't know. I had no idea. That's untouched, that
yeah.
they
wow.
And who knows how long that'll last. And that was one of the things we talked about when we were starting to make the movie was who knows how long we're gonna have this, to
yeah.
play around in before it's I don't know if you saw Trump just opened up the entire I can't remember the name of the
where you're at the Pinchot National Forest? Did he touch any of that? Is he touching?
No, no. But I want to say that it's not Tongass, but something close to that in Alaska. This was yesterday. I read this that they're just opening up the whole place for oil drilling.
Oh God! Are they doing
the entire like whatever it is, 16,000 acres?
Oh my God! Yeah. Yeah, I mean, since watching the material on the movie, I've seen some scenes in the trailer. You look about. You just people are always. You know, I'm sure you're sick of hearing some versions of this, but you look so different in the movie. I mean, your performance is not, I think, what people might expect. It's something that didn't surprise me, though, because you've always, to me, been such a natural, grounded performer, and you're just, you know, it's a different part, maybe. But was that something that you consciously sought out? Were you looking to do something like this?
I mean, yes and no. I didn't really seek them out. They sought me out. But speaking to that, I haven't had, you know, many opportunities, if any, to do this kind of thing, which is very dramatic. You know, it's a guy who goes into the woods and he's way over his head and
struggling with the loss of his wife. I'm not telling you.
Right.
I know you know. I don't know if you remember your wife in the movie.
I never read it. My process is I just go, where? What? Just don't give me any. Don't give me. I don't want to know.
Oh, so you're going to love it once you see it. You're going to be really surprised. Yeah. You're going to get to follow along with the audience.
Yeah.
I hope you make it.
I know. Does he die at the end?
Yeah, I don't want to tell you now. I don't want to spoil it for you.
All right. Okay.
You're grappling with this really intense. The material is you know, it's heavy, as Marty McFly would say. And it doesn't surprise me. But are people, when you're talking about this kind of work, do they preface questions that way? Are they like, well, I would not expect this from you, David Cross?
Yeah, you see the there are some reviews that are like that are basically it's. Not simply a review, but it's also warning people like it's not that funny. You know, he's not, fall down.
Yeah.
He falls down, but he gets hurt. And
there are consequences.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying. is there less pressure for you than when you're promoting something like this to be? So I saw some clips. They're always so funny on talk shows, but it occurred to me that there must be pressure when you're promoting a comedy albums, you know, that's comedic. There must be added pressure to be funny, is there not, or do you not never really feel that?
You know what? It when you're doing those kind of quick, you know, like late night shows, then there's that pressure to be funny. But when you're doing something that's like, you know, you do those kind of like serious radio tours, or you do promotion that's like this, that's a little bit longer. I definitely, you know, I understand, I go into it understanding I'm supposed to be funny, and I've certainly seen enough comments after I've done somebody's thing where it's like, well, that guy wasn't funny. He got all serious. I don't want to hear about Trump or whatever. But I mean, at this point, I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully there's enough funny. Yeah. If it's not funny, it will at least be interesting.
I
hope.
Well, we'll see. In terms of, I mean, I obviously this was something that came to you, but just career wise, shaping your career, was it important to you to do something a little bit more traumatic, a little bit less obvious?
I mean, again, it was the they just came the to me. It was a combination of the opportunity and the material. I think if the material wasn't as strong and intriguing to me, then I possibly wouldn't have done it. Mm-hmm. But it was such a, and also I met with the writer director, Tom Putnam, and he subsequently went on to write numerous books, and that's sort of the thrust of his career. The time that this movie takes place, which is 1995, which is when he went for this thing, he wasn't a writer yet, and now he is a big, you know, full writer, but
he's
full writer. What is that?
Full blown. He has full blown writing disease. I think the book called In Search of Bigfoot. He's a naturalist, Dr. Pyle. But is he actually looking for Bigfoot, or do they just use that as like a metaphor for the?
No, the movie is a bit of a it's an amalgamation of a bunch of different things that occurred to him over the years, and it's just put into this one story, taken from a bunch of his books. But in The Dark Divide, the book that this is based on, all that stuff does happen to him. He stumbles upon what could be construed as evidence of Bigfoot, or at least the appearance of evidence. And it's up to you to decide whether that's the movie doesn't say he exists or he doesn't exist.
Yeah. People would be disappointed.
The whole movie isn't about, about Bigfoot. It's a thing that is thread through that kind of happens about a third of the way into the movie where he stumbles upon this stuff. And then it completely, you know, he's forced to rethink a lot of his things because he is a scientist.
He studies butterflies and moths.
Yeah, lepidopterist. Yeah.
Lepidopterist.
And that was his thing before he, you know, the reason he went on this journey is because his wife, before she dies, fills out an application for a grant to Guggenheim for him to allow him to do this. And it's something that, and she was the extrovert and the very social person in the relationship. And he was just more of a kind of not necessarily antisocial, but just she was the active person, the proactive person in the relationship. And he had for years, you know, been saying like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this. I want to do it. But he just never got around to it because he'd find excuses, and it was always like, "Well, it's going to be rainy this season, so I'll probably wait until." And it was always just putting it off and putting it off because he was scared. He wasn't ready, and he wasn't. And then when she knows she's dying, everybody, you know, it's clear. It's one of the last things she does before she dies, and unbeknownst to him, she's dead, he gets a letter saying you've gotten this grant, and he's thrilled, and then he sees what it's for. It's for to walk all 124 miles of that of what's known as the Dark Divide, the Gifford Pinchot Trail, which is crazy. It's crazy. It's the, you know, just making the movie where we had
you shot there then, obviously.
Oh yeah, yeah. Wow. And I think we shot for 4.5 weeks, and
it was 22 days, I think I read. God.
Yeah, it was. We shot a week in. Or at least 3 or 4 days in Portland. And then we moved to kind of the outer areas of Mount Hood. But then when we go in there, when we go into like Mount Adams and Mount Hood and we get into the trail, like we were in the trail and there's no, you know, you're bringing skeleton crews.
Yeah, I bet.
There's no roads. You go to a road and then you have to hike in for a mile with all this equipment. There's no phone service. There's no.
Well, how do they do that? They just have generators. They bring generators.
Yeah.
How
you know, and you charge, you know, you're charging stuff up and you're walking off the trail. And then, and that all the stuff in and around the lava tubes was crazy intense.
Yeah. I didn't know they existed. I read about these lava. What describe that? It's like cold lava. I mean, obviously. What does that look like? What is that like being there?
It's, it's all, you know, I don't know exactly, but hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years old. And there's all the tubes that are probably, I mean, I'm going to guess roughly 100 feet, if not bigger, of these. Everything's jagged, and all the earth is around. You have to descend into these things. I mean, you have to strap in. You have to get a safety harness and go down these, like, it honestly looks like the entrance to a Bond villain's laboratory.
Lair.
You can't really tell from the outside, and then there's like a door that's covered with grass, and you move that aside.
Then
there's like a 7-foot steel vault thing, and you descend those like diamond metal stairwells, and you have to, you know, there's like clanking. You have to wear special equipment.
All to just get to the shooting area. I mean,
and it's really dangerous, and the air is different down there. It's like thicker. All that stuff that you see in the film kind of looks underwaterish. That's all. Those are particles. That's all real.
Oh my God.
it was, I'm going to guess it was about 40, 42, 43 degrees, wet. It's all damp.
And you shot in the summertime. This is in the summer, right? May.
Yeah, but you're so far down. There's no, oh my sun, I mean, there's right. no sunlight.
There's no seasons.
There's no seasons. There's no air. There's no wow. ventilation.
Do you have breathing apparatus? Like, do you have oxygen tanks and stuff? Or are you?
We didn't, but I will say that several people had to go to get checked at a hospital.
Oh my God!
And we had, and there was a when we were in that pit, kind of that I wouldn't call it a pit, whatever that where I get lost in the. What do you call it? The compass doesn't uh-huh. work anymore. It's too bad.
David, I have to confess, they sent me three scenes in the trailer and then all the, so I've yet to see the full.
There's like a pit where, anyway, getting down there, somebody else got injured, had to go that we had a number of injuries, shooting the movie.
And did you ever think, this is probably ignorant to say, but did you ever think, can we shoot this a little closer to Portland? You know, somewhere a little bit less
I'll tell
severe.
I'll tell you exactly where that happens. There's a part where I fall into a river. Uh-huh. I'm trying to cross this branch. I'm trying to make my way across the stream, and I fall into the river. And there's no, you cannot tell. And I brought this up. I mean, this was actually a big point of contention for me when you're shooting, but you can't tell when you watch it that water is whatever it is, 35 degrees.
Right,
And all that water was literally was ice 25 minutes ago. It's from the mountain.
Oh my God.
You know, it's melting and it goes down. That's what the river
holy
feeds
shit.
And you know, it was hypothermia was a real danger and an issue, and I couldn't shoot it the way I would have normally have shot it. And there was the health safety team that was there was like, pull them out now. Like I'd get in for, and I've never experienced in my life the fog of when hypothermia starts setting in. Uh-huh. Your head. It was like because I had to go underwater.
Oh my God.
And the director's going, you got to go underwater. I was like, and when you see the movie and you'll hear me going, you'll see it. You'll hear me going, no, can't. That's all real. That's me trying to leave and get out.
Yeah, I was going to, oh my God. And, I was going to ask, it must make it, not forget easier. You just don't act. You're not acting in a lot of
things.
There's
no acting. I mean, it's honestly self-preservation. It's like, get me the fuck out of here.
Stop shooting.
The safety guys were like, pull them out, you know, grabbing me.
Oh and, my you know, God. They had that aluminum looking blanket. Did they have one of those thermal ready to go? Yeah.
They had they had a countdown, you know, I was only allowed in for X amount of time and I had to go underwater. God. The thing is you cannot tell
right
when you watch how cold the water is. I could have shot that in a fucking swimming pool, heated swimming pool.
And you're a good actor. It's like, let me act
I'll act cold.
Yeah.
I'll act like I'm in danger of dying.
Yeah. Look at me.
It's like the way I describe it is like putting you know when you go to the dentist and you get x-rays, they put that kind of heavy lead burn on you?
Yeah.
It's like that over your brain. It's just...
Oh, my God.
There were words I couldn't think of, and couldn't communicate. It goes away pretty quickly. I mean, I'd say within a couple minutes, I was kind of getting back to... I was just kind of...
Yeah.
But I couldn't... I kept saying... I couldn't think of the word trailer. I was trying to describe... go back, you know, and I couldn't. I didn't have the words.
Oh, God. That's terrifying.
I kept referring to Portland as Puerto Rico, like trying to say, we could do it in Puerto Rico. And like people were not understanding. And eventually, that only lasts a couple minutes.
That must be terrifying for you, especially because you seem like somebody who really values you're so good with words, and I really admired that about you. The way you're so descriptive when you tell a story, that must be particularly scary for you.
Well, it gives you a very brief but stark idea of what dementia might be for somebody. Like you can't think of the words, and I know I have the picture in my head, and I'm trying to say it, and I can tell by the reaction that it's not making any sense.
Yeah.
But that only lasted a few minutes, and then I was, you know.
Well, also, David, how delicate we are, how we're all slaves to this mechanism in our heads that at the time you probably wanted it to be Puerto Rico. Your body probably wanted it to be Puerto Rico. instead of Portland. God. So when you see the movie now, you think, or when you eventually see the movie, do you think you'll think, oh God, this could have been, will I be able to tell that it's, you're in the elements, or could it be anywhere?
No, I mean, I knew that when we were shooting it, and then, you know, I was a part of the editing process and, you know, ADR and all that stuff. So I've seen it. I've seen the movie now, you know, dozens of times, probably won't see it again until my kid's grown up or something. I show it to her, but I knew that then. And of course you can look at it and go, I mean, I guess if you go hiking a lot and you're familiar with that, you would kind of fill in the blanks going, boy, I bet that water is really cold. But outside of that, you can't right. tell.
But the rest of it, it must have been important to you, to the filmmaker, to Tom, to the author, to shoot it there. I mean, for it, that strikes me as such an important part of the character almost in the movie.
Well, but also it's stunning. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, there's a bunch of drone shots and you get, God. They did an amazing job of just saying like, this is where we are. And I've never spent any time in the woods in the Pacific Northwest, which is, you know, I've spent plenty of time in
the woods. Camper? Do you like to go camp? Are you an outdoorsy at all person?
No, I mean, I'm outdoorsy, but I'm not like, I'm not a roughing it guy. You know, I'll spend a night in a tent that's got some amenities.
You know, but, a yurt.
But,
wow. So that alone.
Not at all.
Wow. But you knew what the shoot was going to be like, what it was going to entail.
But it was all kind of vague. It wasn't real in that sense until you get out there and then you're like, oh, this is as far as we can take vehicles and we've got another, you know, 3/4 mile to get in here. And I did do some prep work where I went out with the survivalist and he taught me some stuff and I went into some of the trails that we started shooting and that were more accessible and you see how stunning it is there. But once you really get into the interior, it's magical and ethereal.
I bet.
It's just a woods that I haven't really ever encountered. I'm mostly East Coast,
you know,
in Georgia and maybe New York and Massachusetts.
Yeah, I'd love to explore out there.
It's different, man. It's green. It's more, you feel you're smaller there.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled babbel.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
I don't know how you felt about Bigfoot before this experience, but I would imagine that it makes the reality
right.
of their...
He's all right. He's okay.
I would imagine it makes the reality of their the possibility of that kind of creature a lot more believable, you know, a lot more acceptable.
Absolutely. I mean, the probably the number one question I get as I'm, you know, doing this stuff and talking about the movie is, so I gotta ask, do you? And I pretend I don't know what doing what. Do you believe in Bigfoot? I don't. I don't believe in Bigfoot, but I do understand how people, especially prior to a lot of the technology we have today, and the idea of spiritual, mythical, projecting onto this world that they're in.
Lore.
And yeah, I get it. Yeah. I can certainly understand why people would think that. And there's something in, I don't think it's in the movie, but where Pyle is talking about it in the book, because again, he is a scientist, a professor, and this goes against a lot of, you know, what he is trained to believe. And he writes about how, given the woods and given, and I believe this now too, after having been in there, given the world that one could live in and raise their own creatures or whatever, you know, not not humans raising the creatures, but creatures raising their own families over generations, you can see how they quite easily could exist, and they could exist without being found and discovered. And not very many people are in that interior as we were in, you know.
Yeah, I bet, yeah. So that's a yes. I'll put you down for a maybe.
You can put me down for a Yeti.
Yeti queen. There's a great scene that they did send between you and I'm forgetting the actress name from Dead Man. Great actor.
Gary Farmer. Yeah.
Gary Farmer. Yeah.
He's great.
I always love seeing him, and he looks great in the scene.
So he was so good in Dead Man, but he was. I was thrilled when I found out he was going to do that part, and he's kind of intimidating in a way because that's a lot of his. He's very soft-spoken and a man of, you know, like the stuff that he says is kind of important.
He's got a lot of gravity.
A lot of gravity. Yeah.
Yeah. He strikes me that way. And the scene is interesting because he presents a position that I've never heard said so kind of clearly.
That's one of the things that made me, when I read the script, and the script changed quite a bit, but that idea of presenting that viewpoint in a not speaking down to it and kind of a reversal of what we are accustomed to seeing really drew me to this. And I was like, all right, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be fair. It's going to be equitable. Right. In that
it's not
sense.
Condescending. It's not like, I'm the environmental savior. Well, just so people know, it's a scene between, so Robert represents a much more pragmatic human element of deforestation. You think of deforestation. Am I speak? I may not know the context properly.
Well, and back then it was a very big issue because jobs. It was about
the logging
in the '90s, and it was quite contentious between the communities and two dimensional applications to each side, and people had their bumper stickers, you know, and that was kind of the mentality in the discourse at the time.
And so you represent the environmentalist side. Who would like his character would probably refer to like you know in a pejorative way as a tree hugger, lefty or something. And you're talking about the spotted owl, which at the time I remember being a big issue. I think it had it recently gone extinct or it was close to extinction.
It was in danger of going extinct. Yeah.
And he says, well, have you ever met a spotted owl? Have you ever encountered one? And you're like, no, I would. And he says, it's something you don't often think about in terms of endangered or extinct species, which is like, well, what good are they? You know, what?
They're assholes.
Yes. And yeah, I'm curious to know how you think about that, what you think about that in terms of, because there's so many creatures obviously going extinct. We're experiencing like a sixth extinction and so they're constant species disappearing.
Well, I think as the character, as Gary Farmer's character, and he plays the foreman, the logging foreman, and he talks about the jobs, but again, it's not condescending and it's not, there's, it's an actual discussion and it's not, And he brings up a lot of valid points and kind of shuts my character down to a degree where there's not a lot of the retorts are just like, well, I mean, there's, you know, we should be able to figure something out, you know, or something. It just.
Yeah. Your exchange, it ends with, and I don't want to, you know, I at the risk of like recounting the whole scene, but it goes, your argument is that, well, if we lose the spot, if we lose this species of insect, then we lose the larger creatures that feed on it, the reptiles, and then on and on, up to us. And then there are fewer people eventually. And he says, okay. There's a great kind of balanced, yeah. Your, I loved that exchange.
Yeah, you have that feeling too, like I'm not being condescended to in a way that I'm so often condescended to, especially in Hollywood movies,
yeah,
that take a liberal, a bias.
Totally. You know? When you were growing up, was acting ever something that you wanted to do, or was it specifically you wanted to be a comedian?
Both, I think. I think stand-up came later as the sense of like, oh, I'm going to be a stand-up comic as opposed to being funny or silly. And I was always funny and silly. I moved around constantly when I was a kid. And so I was often the new kid. And so there would be two, you know, almost like in a bipolar sense, in some classes I'd be shy. I would never say a word. I'd sit in the back. And then in other classes where I guess I intuited that this was a safe place to do it, I was silly and boisterous and you know,
yeah,
provocative or whatever. And so I knew that worked,
right,
to a degree.
Right.
I think I had that thing I was just born with, and one of my sisters as well, of just sort of wanting to perform. I can't tell you what it is, but
yeah,
it'll be fun to get up on stage and do that stuff.
I think it's in Shut Up You Fucking Baby where you talk about, I mean, you talk a lot about growing up in Georgia as one of the only Jewish kids, if not the only. And so I when I think of your childhood, I think of that story where you go over your friend's house and the mother was like, now David, I gotta ask you about, did y'all's people eat regular food? You know, and she's trying to figure out how Jewish kids function as opposed to.
Yeah, it was remarkable. The mostly well-meaning, but the ignorance was stunning sometimes. Yes. Like they really, and again, this would be, you know, 70s. When I was like younger, I mean, as I got older, wasn't brought up so much, but the people, this kind of Southern Baptist, rural suburban, mentality back when there were only, you know, what, 11 channels of TV or whatever, and no internet and just what they thought Jews were and did. And it was limited to pretty much Fiddler on the Roof. It was like Fiddler on the Roof. And then the kind of archetypical, New York Jew, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, that's their idea of what Jews are. Uh-huh. And then, you know, the occasional, Nazi propaganda poster, I guess, makes its way in there.
I know y'all's people burst out into song and date Diane Keaton.
So there, you know, there, that thing about, you know, yeah, can y'all's people eat oatmeal?
Yeah.
Is a legitimate, you know, like people like, I don't want to be rude, but it's right. Just like, it's, yeah,
that's the well-meaning part. That's why that bit is so funny. Cause it, you present it in such a sweet, kind of sweet Southern, that well-meaning way. Like, I don't want to offend you.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I also think about your experience, because I'm actually about to go to Atlanta in a couple of days. I'm working there for a week, and
whenever I just got back from there.
Oh, did you? Oh, I need.
Yeah,
some...
I was working. I was in a production. That's why the beard is shaved, to go back to what you were bringing up before. I was in the middle of working. Well, not even in the middle. We were almost done on a show that gosh, I think I got, I mean, it was like Thanksgiving, from right after Thanksgiving, I was in Atlanta until off and on. And then we got shut down on March 12th, I want to say.
Oh my God.
And sent home. And we were in the middle of episode 6 of an 8 episode
show.
And and I'm not even in episode 8. So I was like, oh
my God.
So close.
So the pandemic ended up being really tragic.
Yeah, it affected me in a very negative way, Justin, and I'll never forgive it. I'm first in line for any handouts.
Oh man, so you had to go back and finish it up. I'm so curious. I won't ask you because no one will care or be able to relate, really. But I'm curious about the all the protocols and how they're doing stuff.
As I might imagine, anybody would be. I was nervous about every aspect of it. I was nervous about leaving New York, which is relatively safe and behaves itself, and we're able to enjoy certain amenities because we all acted like adults. And going to a state, going to Georgia, where they don't have that, and people, and at the time it was particularly bad. And I'm from there, I know, and my family's still there, and I'm, you know.
Oh, they are. I was wondering, they're still in Roswell?
Yeah. No, they're not in Roswell. My mom is, I got her a condo in Midtown, and my sister and sister-in-law live in North Druid Hill. So just, part of the city, but not, you know, not smack in downtown or whatever. But,
God, I feel like I know your sister, but I think it's only because of your documentaries, and she's been a part of you. I've seen her.
I got two sisters. One is in North Carolina, and that's the one that I do stories about. The one who's a little bit more. What's the word? Redneck? No. Not white trash. I'm trying to think of the. I have two sisters. So. One's in North Carolina, and
you fight about politics. You must constantly be at each other's throats about politics. You seem like you have such different points of view.
With my little sister?
No, the North Carolina.
No, she doesn't know. First of all, she's anti-Trump. Uh-huh. She's definitely not that she's active in any way, shape, or form. But she's, she has, gay friends, and there's she's progressive, not in a proactive way, but she's definitely liberal leaning for sure. And that's how we were all brought up, and her community certainly isn't. She's in the woods, she's in the boonies in North Carolina, and
in the Blue Ridge, like near like Asheville kind of area.
No, she's east of that.
In Atlanta,
a tiny town.
Sorry, David. Were you at least able to see your family down there? And are they behaving any different?
Oh yeah. Oh well, they're. I mean, my mom's 82. I want to say something like that. 81, 82, and she was in the hospital 2 years ago with a very big scare, and she was in ICU for quite a while. Twice, she was in for 10 days, came out, and then 4 days later had to go back in, and it was really a scary time. And so she's like, I'm not, I don't ever want to go through that again. And she was in her apartment condo. I think she was, I want to say 70 something days straight without leaving. And my sister would get her food, go to the grocery store, and they'd be masked up with gloves and leave it at her front door. Now it's like she's able to go to my sister's, and we've all hung out. Because my wife, who's also in the business, is in in Toronto, so she's there. They have to do 2 weeks of hardcore quarantine. You cannot leave.
Wow.
They track you. You are inside for 14 days. You don't leave. And now she's starting to shoot. She started shooting yesterday.
Wow. Was she climbing the walls? 2 weeks.
She did okay. Room. I think at this point we know so many people have done it, and we.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I had to walk my dog, so I had to go out at least 3 times a day. But when we were in the thick of it here in the city, where it was, you know, nobody's out, everything's locked up, you're hearing sirens. I live off of a main, you know, main road that is goes east to west, and so you would hear sirens like pretty every few minutes. Just I'm talking about like in the really bad like 10 days, two weeks, 2.5 weeks part, where before we started getting a handle in New York City, when there were like body bags and refrigerator trucks and, like, burying bodies in fucking Central Park. I mean, it was crazy.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Sorry, but they had makeshift morgues set up. It was nuts, dude. It was
this April, May.
This, it was, end of March, April. I think we were kind of out of it by May, but,
So when they sent you home from this thing at March 12th around there, were you thinking like, oh, they're overreacting? Had you been keeping?
Yes, I did. I did think that. I did. My initial thing was because the director of that episode. So the way it happened was, I got a call. I was supposed to be, you know, in at whatever, a 8 a.m. pickup or something like that, and got a call that the director had a fever, so they were going to shut down for half a day. And I thought that was ridiculous. Like, the director had a fever. Come on, guys. And it had started, you know, we had been hearing about it since like January, February, but it hadn't really, it was only bad in, I think, Washington State and New York and New Jersey at that point. That was it.
Right.
And like, and then that turned into the whole day was shut down. Then, I think it was the next day, they said, we're shutting down for 3 weeks. So you go home. And I'm there with my daughter. I have a 3.5-year-old. And,
right.
And again, my wife was working. She was going to come down.
She was
down.
In Toronto at the time?
No. She was doing something else, but she was going to come down. But that all got canceled. And then 3 weeks, when I got back here, that's when I got a real clear understanding of like, yeah. We're not going back up in 3 weeks, guys. We're not. Yeah. We're lucky if it's going to be 3 years. I mean, this is crazy. God. And God. Then New York got a handle on everything.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, proud of my, you know, fellow people here, citizens, for treating it seriously and behaving themselves. And now we have like open street restaurants. We have all this
great
shit.
Oh my God! It kind of is. There's something so European about it. I had never seen New York like that.
And it's going to be permanent. They're going to make that permanent thing, too. Yeah, they said so. De Blasio said so. About a month ago.
I hate, you know, it's hard to talk about anything in a positive light during this time without prefacing it with, like, you know, obviously it's horrible what's happening, but there are some, you know, the restaurant situation in New York, for example, is like, it's kind of cool. I wish it hadn't come at this expense.
But, I mean, that's smart, great, good. Cities will take adversity and learn from it. And, you know, hopefully I think there's going to be less traffic. I think from this point forward, you know, they're taking spaces that would normally be parking spaces. And now you can, it's seating for dining. And those are going to stay. Not everywhere, but in these, I think there's... I want to say like 39 of these where they just close off the from one end to another.
Yeah, and when the West Village, stretches. I mean, all those little Cornelia and Jones Street, a lot of those little streets there off of 6th Avenue, I couldn't believe it. It was like what they do for, you know, street fairs or whatever.
Dude, I take my daughter on the weekend. We go, I'm around the corner from Vanderbilt in Prospect Heights. And
oh, I love it there.
They shut off Pacific all the way up to, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, I can't remember what it was, Sterling or whatever it is. They shut, the whole thing is shut down. Everybody is out in the streets, families.
Wow.
Everybody's wearing their masks. And everybody's behaving and wearing their masks. And I take my kid there with their scooter, and there's all the kids and their scooters, and they're all playing in the street. There's no traffic.
My God.
Everybody's eating. It's very, as you said, very European, and it's the best. It's the most hopeful, optimistic thing in this time of absolute shit.
Yeah.
And and terrifying uncertainty, you have this thing like on the weekends, huh. We all come out as a community. It's very New York.
It's
I'm like, why do I spend so much money to live here? And it's like, oh, that's
yeah.
why.
Well, it's very different. But now, of course, because I know your stuff so well, I'm now thinking about the rollerblader after 9/11. There's something post 9/11 about this.
yeah, well, that guy. Sometimes people ask me
Jeremy?
I can count on one hand the times that I've exaggerated.
Right.
Like, that is an absolute for real. And he had a gas mask.
Oh, you weren't, meaning you weren't exaggerating?
No, I'm not. I was exaggerating. Oh, I'm telling you, I that was absolutely the guy in his fucking, tight disco shorts or whatever, rollerblading up the street with a gas mask on. Was the greatest. Defiant! Defiant.
Yeah. Yes. If I, then I'm gonna, then the terrorists win. Yeah. I quote that. My friends and I were so in love with that bit. And
tanks. There are tanks on the street.
Yes.
National Guard people.
Right. Yeah.
So your other crazy.
Your other post 9/11 observation that I'll never forget is when you realized that the city was gonna make it and things were gonna go back to normal when you saw a guy in a garbage truck with remnants of the buildings in the back, driving alongside a woman and hitting on her.
Oh, yeah, that's also true. I was at Tompkins Square Park when I saw that. And that guy was going down Avenue A.
Yeah.
And there's a guy hanging off of a filthy garbage truck.
Yeah.
And just hitting on women.
It's just like in the most like primitive, like blatant, like, what's up, baby? As if the woman's gonna stop and be like, you say it better than, but as if that's ever gonna work.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, mm-hmm. We're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Do people, when they approach you, because I feel like I know you, I think, so much better than I do. We've spent a little time together, but do people approach you with, it's just such familiarity, people who know your comedy, are they very familiar?
Yeah, sometimes, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fine. Sometimes they're a bit too familiar, as well as anybody. There's a line that can be crossed, and everybody has a different place where that line is. But
do you draw different boundaries when you're with you said you have a 3.5-year-old?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I got to say, one of the one of the upsides, tiny little upsides for me, for during COVID is, I've got a mask and a hat on.
And
people don't recognize me, you know?
David, I know, again, this is not going to be relatable to people. We're going to probably sound a little douchey, but I'm not saying
this has happened.
It's an effect of what has happened. No, of course, but that's true. But going down, I hadn't been in the West Village on the weekends in so long. It was just an area that I avoided. It had gotten really, you know, you've been there. It's so crowded on the weekends, so touristy, and God, it was so nice to just walk around.
Yeah. I'm with you.
At what point did that start changing for you? I mean, you have done so many different things. You must get recognized for. Of course, we should really get to Alvin and the Chipmunks before we run out of time.
Please.
I mean, let's address the elephant in the room, the little tiny precocious elephant. That surprised me, because at that point I had known you so well as there was something very punk rock about you, and I knew your work so well as being subversive and
I ate a lot of shit for that.
Yeah, I know, and I don't want to rehash any of that,
it's not like I don't understand where people are coming from, but the answer is, and it may not be a satisfying answer to people, but the answer was I hadn't worked in 6 months, which is kind of an eternity. And you really do start thinking, am I ever going to work again?
Totally.
And I think if I hadn't worked, if it had been 2 months, I probably would have said no. And look, I don't regret any of it. So I happily took the job. I don't think anybody anticipated it would be as wildly successful as it was and spin off. And it was contractually obligated to do. I mean, that's part of anybody's contract. You sign up and it has a contingency thing just in case it does become wildly popular. I was contracted to do three of them. Should it?
See, I didn't know that, David. I now am wondering if I was as well. I must have been.
I'm sure you were. It's just standard in any of those type of things.
But was the experience a positive one shooting it? I mean, you're very funny
one,
in
the
it.
The first one was fine. And the second one was okay. The third one was, I'd say, this is a different category of a bad experience. Like shooting The Dark Divide was really hard. And a lot of those scrapes and bruises you see are all real, and it was a tough thing, and there were no amenities, there was no craft service, down and dirty and tough and not fun in that sense. But doing the third Alvin and the Chipmunks movie was so they were so disrespectful of me and so mean, like just heady and weird. And I could tell you a bunch of different anecdotes of like It was really strange, because when you think of and let me put this through to preface this by saying I can't tell you how many parents over the decades have been like, man, thank you for doing that, because I have to watch that fucking thing 40 times, and at least you're funny, at least this, you know, I've gotten that comment a million times. It always makes me feel better. That in conjunction with kids who are like, hey, you're brilliant. Kids loved it. And it was international. I mean, I got recognized in Mozambique, on a beach in Mozambique. But God. It was nuts. But they were so shitty to me. And I always like, you know, the stuff that's funny, that's not in the script. That's stuff that I'm working on. And I'm a professional. And I come in and I know my lines and I'm there when I'm supposed to be. And I come up with new things and I pitch things.
Just for people, sorry to interrupt, David, but I'm not sure people know how much on a script like that, on a movie like that, because I've done others. I remember Herbie Fully Loaded being like that, whereas the script was not there. It was written by funny people, but it just wasn't. And so they encourage you. I mean, the studio people encourage you to, they love somebody like you because you're writing for them too.
Yes, yes. And and I assume that happens every time I'm hired. They're mm-hmm. hiring me in part because of a writer's eye as well, which I'm happy with. I'm happy to give suggestions. They can take them or leave them. It doesn't matter. But I just can't even help myself. I'm a writer first and foremost, and you're coming up with stuff and in performance, and I take scripts home and I come back the next morning like, hey, what if I did this? What if we inverted this line? What if I, you know, whatever.
So they're lucky that they have an Emmy nominated. I mean, you know,
it was just, again, the first two were fine. That last one was just so inexplicably
weird,
just awful. And there was a whole backstory to it that I don't want to bore people with, but they were shitty in every single way at every point. And I actually lost $150,000 of what would have been a bonus because of a language in the contract, which said if I don't know the language, but if you don't promote something or if you were negative or something like that. And I went on Conan and I described the producer that was just awful to me, just terrible, just again, so mean and unnecessarily so, and petty and weird and unpleasant. And there's this thing that a lot of the Hollywood studio heads have that it's almost like in politics where it's not about the thing you're fighting for, you know, studio versus agents or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's about winning. It's not about the thing that, you know, where like me as the actor or the director or the writer or whatever, I'm arguing for this or I'm trying to get this thing in the contract. And then the lawyer and, you know, your team is going back and forth with their team. And it's not about the thing itself. It's about who's going to win.
A lot of these fights are not at all creative based. They're not about.
No. That's what I'm saying. That's pretty much what I'm talking. It's
juvenile.
Of,
it's like you find yourself placating these people in a way you would a child.
Because they want to win. They want to be able to go, I won that. And sometimes you have to change the language so it appears that they won and you are acquiescing a point or something because it's just weird. I felt that in particular with the issues I was having on the third album. Here's one really petty thing they did that was so shitty, and this is amongst a number of them, but keep in mind, this is the third movie I'm doing that I'm contractually obligated to do. A part of the backstory that I'd go into was I was in London at the time in pre-production on a show, and we'd been asking for a year, am I going to be in it? Am I going to be in the third?
No.
I need to know because I've got, you know, I'm a producer of the show and I've got 50 people.
This is Todd Margaret?
Yeah. 50 people whose lives are, you know, whose jobs.
Yeah.
And I'm here in London and you know, we would we would ask them every 4 or 5 days for months.
Ugh.
We don't know. Could be. We don't know. And how do you not know? And then we.
Right.
Anyway, I'm not going to go into that whole thing, but it was awful.
God. And,
we were shooting in Hawaii and I get to the location, base camp, and there's, and keep in mind, I'm number two on the, meaning.
Is Jason in this one too?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Meaning for those who don't know, you know, the hierarchy of your
of
stars,
the
call sheet. So number two is as high as you can get without being number one.
And sorry if I'm interrupting that you're going to get back to this, David. I'm just curious. Did you then have to put a pin in the Todd Margaret shoot? Did you have to then?
Oh yeah.
It
was brutal. And we lost cast and we lost. It was,
oh
they
my
were,
God.
Oh yeah. And,
oh, that's important.
Yeah. And I can tell you in another, if we're talking, I'll give you the.
Okay.
Horrors of how that went, but and you know how you lose locations, you lose crew, you lose all kinds of shit.
And I know you were so involved in that, and it was a lower budget thing. So wow, but so that sucks. That happened, but you're in Hawaii. Sorry.
So I'm in Hawaii, and I go to base camp, and there's you know, a bunch of really nice trailers, and then there's like this. Broken down, smaller, like, you know, those kind of curved, roundy ones?
I actually want to get one.
Like a camper van type thing, you would detach it. And there's, and it's like, I'm talking, it's got to be 40 years old with, with, you know, rust and it's discolored. And they're like, that's your trailer. And I know immediately, immediately yeah. what's going on.
Yeah.
And this is in the beginning of like, are you? And they're like, yeah, sorry, man. That's all they had. And oh I call my agent. You know, we've been going back and forth for weeks now at this point because like they called me. I was actually at a store with my wife and I get a call. This is right before Christmas. I get a call. David, I have Brian and Tim and Harris on the phone. And you know, it's, you know, when it's your agent, lawyer, manager,
all of them. Yeah.
It's only going to be either really great news or really yes. awful news. It's yes. only going to be that. It's yeah. never going to be anything in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And I'm luckily I'm kind of by the doors of the store. We had just gone in and I mouth to my wife, who was my wife at the time. And I'm like, hang on a second. This is, and the first thing you say is, are you sitting down?
Oh,
I'm like, what is it?
Oh.
So they are doing, the third album, The Chipmunks. You are in it. You're all over it. And they want you in Hawaii, in 2 weeks or in 10 days. Oh. And I'm in London. Like I can't even, and so a million things like, what? I can't even, maybe it wasn't, maybe they wanted me there on like, because I remember saying I can't even get there physically. I would have to go to New York, get clothes. It must have been like a week or something, or Friday or one of those things.
That's got to be a fuck you, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
I'm just imagining. Well, how well, did then, they not
then they said fairly... I said I can't possibly do that. And you know, we've been asking forever. I'm in the middle of pre-production, blah, blah, blah. And they said, yes, we told them all this. And they said, if he doesn't show up, we'll sue him for breach of contract. That's how they started. That's how this whole thing started. That's the communication.
That aggressive started. Right away, like hostile right away.
Yeah. Hostile and not, Jesus. I mean, as a producer, you produce stuff, you try to make everybody happy and you're balancing a ton of shit.
Especially the lead actor, a lead actor who's done, you know, really great work in your previous two movies. That's crazy to me.
I'm sorry that this went off on this.
No. I by the way, you know, we can cut anything out. And
also, Justin, I'm going to have to run.
Yeah. God. Shit. Dave, do you have 7 minutes?
Yeah.
Sick. Okay. I'm so sorry. Really quick questions. Just like a lightning round kind of thing. Sorry. Your most commonly used emoji, if you use emojis, would you say?
I don't really use them that much, but I annoy my wife who hates them. And then my wife texts way too much, just texting stuff that I don't need to know. Because every time he texts, I got to stop, pull it out of my pocket, you know, hit my security thing, look on.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, Kay. I'm like, don't text Kay anymore, please.
Okay.
I got it. So I just randomly throw emojis in. So I don't have a common
one. Okay. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Oh, baseball.
Oh, yeah, you're Mets, Yankees?
Braves. Braves and Red Sox.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Emerson. Right. Spent a lot of time. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would it be? Your go-to? God, I would hate
And we're talking about like snack
stoned,
food. Like...
You're stoned. You just want to, you crave this thing when you're stoned.
But not, is it any food or is it snack food? Like
snack food.
Snack food. Okay. Tell me if this works and if it doesn't, I'll give you something else. But pretzel rods dipped in peanut butter.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Like that. You like the Trader Joe's things with the peanut butter in the middle, the little bites?
That's a poor man's version of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about taking the sturdy Snyder's.
Yeah.
Maybe adding a little salt to the peanut, getting the crunchy, good stuff. The good stuff, the crunchy stuff, crunchy peanut butter, mixing around, and then I'll have a glass of red wine, and then I'll just dip the pretzel rods in the peanut butter. It's great.
Great. But speaking of that, one of my favorite things to watch you on is Doug getting Doug with high, during which you say, I can't believe anyone's watching this. And it made me laugh so hard because I looked at the YouTube views and it's like, I think almost 900,000 people have seen it. What's your favorite, not favorite movie of all time, but the one that you are really looking forward to showing your daughter? The one that you loved.
Maybe Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Willy
Wonka.
I think she'll really dig, and I still love it on multiple levels. And that I can't wait to show her that.
Yeah. What a great 3.5. What a fun. Yeah. Great age.
You're I can hear lovely. It running up. I can hear.
Oh God. Okay. Okay. If you had to live somewhere else, where would it be? Two minutes.
London.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of time there. Okay.
My wife and I have talked about it, and we have a lot of friends there, and I miss it.
I bet. You spent so much time there.
Yeah, and there I came to really love and appreciate so many things about it. Yeah.
Mm. If you could have dinner with three people dead or alive whom you've never met, you'd just love to sit down and have a meal with them.
Noam Chomsky and that I've never met.
Or someone you haven't spent significant time with that you'd like to
and
maybe met
Ricky
superficially.
Ricky Gervais.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And and Josh Marshall.
Okay, that's great dinner. I would love to be there.
No chicks. No women allowed.
Who are you ever afraid of saying something like that? Obviously joking and now getting in trouble. I mean, you'd say the craziest shit.
No.
Are you more concerned
getting,
now?
Getting in that? Trouble? How would I get in trouble? Am I gonna get grounded?
Getting grounded? Yeah, getting grounded on Twitter.
Oh fuck that! Fuck Twitter! Fuck those people.
Yeah. Who's your favorite Muppet, David?
I think when I was a kid, it was Grover. But as I got older, it was Fozzie Bear.
I love Fozzie. If you could be one age for the rest of your life physically, what would you pick? Knowing what you know now, being as developed as you are.
Gosh, I'd say 34, 35.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I miss that. Would you rather be called unattractive or unfunny?
Oh, I...
What do you think I said?
I've been called unattractive so many times. That will never bother me. I was balding when I was 19.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I was, yeah, no.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
I'd rather be unattractive.
You're
called
my
unattractive
first...
than unfunny. That's fine.
You're my first guest who's scoffed at that. Like, oh, please.
Yeah, no, people can call me unattractive. It's fine.
Almost done. Which Golden Girl do you most identify with? Dorothy Blanche?
I have never seen a Golden Girls episode.
No kidding.
Never seen
No
one.
Kidding. Dogs or cats do you prefer?
Dogs.
Uh-huh. You have
hesitation.
A dog? No.
Yes, I have a dog. Uh-huh.
Do you prefer the Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Man, that's tough. I don't know. The Who.
Okay. Okay. Do you have a favorite Beatles song?
I always liked, when I was younger, I liked Glass Onion because it references a bunch of their stuff. And I just liked the idea of doing that. I thought that was pretty cool. When my daughter was, just born, an infant, I would sing Golden Slumbers to her and Good Night. So those two, you know, time to say good. Yeah, so I'd sing those to her. So maybe those right now.
Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. David, I'm so glad I got to do this because I know you have to go, and which is good because I don't have time to properly articulate what a huge fan I am of your work.
Well, thank you so much, Justin. This was a pleasure. And we had an in-depth conversation about Alvin and the Chipmunks 3, which I don't think has ever occurred.
Not a lot of people can say. Yeah. America was waiting.
There you go. We can all go to bed now.
thanks, Dave. And the movie looks really, you look incredible in it. And,
well, thanks.
And tell Amber I say hi.
I will. She'll be back in about a week and a half, I think.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you again in person. I really appreciate you doing
this. All right.
This.
I'm right over the bridge. I'm in Brooklyn.
I would love to see you. I would love it.
All right, man.
In our new European city.
Yeah, we're come up to Vanderbilt. It's awesome.
Well, that just happened.
That happened. I don't know what I was going for.
I just said.
I was trying David Cross. He has a very unique voice, a very unique cadence to his delivery.
I've heard him a lot more than I've seen him, I would say, mm-hmm. because Do you remember you had a, was it just your playlist?
It was my playlist. Well, it was on, it was first a CD that I had in the car.
That's what it was. Yeah. It was on a CD. It was on a mix CD that.
It was Shut Up, You Fucking Baby.
Yeah, it was on, album. But it was mixed in, like certain tracks of his comedy special.
Yeah.
Were mixed in with great songs.
Uh-huh.
So I've been on so many road trips where it'd be like, great song, great song, great song, great 3-minute bit from David Cross, yeah. Great song, great song. And you'd think that if you're in the mode of like listening to great music,
yeah.
You would skip over like a random 3-minute, but I always listened to them.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I knew that material so well.
I know.
So incredibly funny that I know his voice. Like I know his voice so well. So to hear him talk, just to hear him,
converse.
It made me starstruck to hear his voice.
I'm telling you, that's how I am around him. I have to be very careful because I also feel like he's the type of person that has a very high – he's very sensitive to like bullshit, you know, mm-hmm. and to phoniness. And I've always been very self-conscious about being too – gushy or over laughing at his stuff, or like, even though, yeah, I get starstruck around him because he's so familiar to me. That's why I tried to say to him at one point, do people get really approach
you?
You
did. I think you were appropriately respectful. I could tell you were careful with the words you chose, but you were definitely, you paid him a lot of respect.
Okay.
And he didn't, I mean, he received it well, but he didn't overly receive it. You know, he wasn't like, oh, thank you so much. He would kind of like, it sounded like he just kind of took compliments.
Yeah.
And he.
He must know that based on my behavior around him and other people's behavior.
But as much as you did show him respect, you didn't mention Mr. Show or Arrested Development. But you did mention Alvin and the Chipmunks Part 3.
I didn't mention Mr. Show?
No.
Weird. I mean, you know, there are certain things about Mr. Show. I think part of what it was is I've heard him talk so much about mm-hmm. Mr. Show. And I had just heard his entire Marc Maron interview where he goes – and I was very self-conscious about retreading a lot of that stuff. And like, even though I'm sure it would have been interesting
that's
for
that's why
our,
you shouldn't over-research.
Yeah.
Shouldn't listen to other interviews that people have done before you interview them.
Right. Yeah, it would have been, but you know.
Well, then what do you want him to say about it?
Exactly.
And it's a brilliant sketch show that I created.
And I know how, and the truthfully, the story of how he got together with Bob Odenkirk is, I mean, it's interesting, but it's nothing that you can't hear. I mean, like, it's out there. It's like, he's talked about it, and it's basically like, you know, they met through, I think it was Janine Garofalo, he was, a comedian that
right.
they knew, and they didn't like each other at first, and whatever. It's not like, you know. It's also
it's not a great story.
It's not a great story. But on Marc Maron, it's like he goes through the entire timeline and it's two hours and 40 minutes, you know. So I, in a weird way, I mean, we're joking about it. I'd rather hear about his dissatisfaction with an experience like Alvin the Chipmunks.
Oh, I love that. That was great. He really lights up about certain things. You know, I could tell. Not that he was disinterested in other things, but you could tell when he's excited about things.
Exactly.
You know? Like talking about New York City. He was very excited to talk about that. And very excited to talk about Alvin and the Chipmunks 3.
He's incredibly descriptive. I of the many things I admire about him, his ability to tell a story, to paint a picture.
Yes.
He's so quick. He did something in another interview where he says he was describing there's a really funny story about how he was just to make money, he was like a subject in a test group for a drug, for like an antacid. And he tells a very funny story about being hungover at one of these, testing things where they have to take the drug. They have to first eat a lot of like awful food, like really high in fats food and drink a lot of boxed wine and stuff and then take this antacid. And he tells a story. And as he's telling this story, he said, and then, you know, I have to sit in this room and it's just with these people, he calls them like losers from, you know, and he describes them as, it's like being in a bus station in Raleigh, Durham at 3 a.m. And he just says it so quick.
Yeah, it's
descriptive.
It's specific.
Specific.
But I think the best comedians are specific.
Mm-hmm.
Like my favorite comedians are incredibly specific. And even like I noticed that the way he talked about his snack food, how he likes, he was so specific about the pretzel, the certain kind of pretzel rod dipped in with a red wine. Like he really
paints a picture.
Really paints a picture.
Yeah. He shaped the way I thought about a lot of things and the way I saw the world. And what I thought was stand-up comedy was and what was possible with stand-up comedy. And what he did that was different than any comedian I had been familiar with was that he would just tell stories. Mm-hmm. I realized that stand-up can just be a person, a great storyteller.
I admired your perseverance when he wanted to go, too. He was like, my daughter, my 3-year-old daughter is like waiting for me. And you're like, okay, oh yeah, hold on.
I got panicky.
But you did, but I admired, I thought you were going to fold. I thought you were going to be like, okay, I'll let you get to it. But you really pushed through.
Well, he was being very, you know, maybe that's a disrespectful thing. Here I'm going on about how much I respect him. And I was like, well, but he had to get to his daughter. And I'm like, well, just what, who's your favorite, you know, which golden girl do you identify with? But he seemed so amenable up until that point and was like, seemed really game and friendly. So I maybe took advantage
also,
of it.
Also, we can't not have someone do the lightning round.
I know. That happened today.
I don't care how old your daughter is.
No, she'll be fine. We got to get to dogs or cats.
Wait,
sorry to interrupt, but you know, once I know that they know, especially somebody I admire so much, that they have to go, then this is now borrowed time. Now it's like, I got to make it count. This better be important.
Oh, you're on like time and a half speed.
Exactly. Yeah. But also it's like, I start getting really self-conscious about all those questions.
Uh-huh.
When it's like, who's your favorite Muppet? It's like, oh man.
If you're like, what 3 people do you want to have dinner with, dead or alive? And if there's any hesitation, you're like, or if you've met them, or if you've spent a lot of time with them, or if you know them really well.
Or a snack, a snack. I know.
Or any sport. Just name a sport.
Yeah. Or a made-up person. You make up a person.
And did he make up that person, by the way?
Oh.
We might be idiots for not knowing who this person is.
You know what? I didn't want to – I didn't want to look stupid.
His name was Josh Marshall.
I don't know who that is.
I don't either.
But I was like – I didn't want to address it then because –
I'm sure he's a real person because it's a very common-sounding name.
But it would be fun. It would be a David Cross thing to do to just make up that name because he's so dry. That's the other thing.
And it would be a you thing to do to not call him out on it. To be like, oh, yes, I would like to do it.
Phony. Yeah.
Well, a little bit. But
For the sake of that, we talked about that. For the sake of moving
getting back
along
to his daughter.
Yeah.
So
I'm not going to be like, tell me who Josh. Not only is he now being kept from his daughter longer, but he's got to like instruct this imbecile on somebody probably.
He might be some Pulitzer Prize winning.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
I was shocked he had never seen the Golden Girls, but I think it's pretty fair to say that he's a Sophia, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Like a misanthropic and – but with a – but I will say this about David. He has much more heart and he's much more sensitive.
Sophia had heart.
Yeah.
She was just – she observed everything and she had kind of a wry take.
You're right. I just wanted to clarify it because I do think a lot of people have that misconception that he's this kind of cynical and I used the word misanthropic and I just wanted to – I think that's why he's going to be so good in this movie and that's why it's not a surprise to me because he is – he strikes me as a very sensitive
– It looks a bit like Oscar bait.
Yeah.
Doesn't it?
It might hook a few a few voters. Yeah, it might. It's
got,
you know,
like,
what I hate
Sundance
is,
Darling written all over it.
You know what term I hate, which Vince always uses, is really funny? A nod.
Oh.
He might get a nod.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Let's read a letter.
Yeah, I hope it does. I really like him, and I am really grateful that he did. So selfishly, I hope he gets one. This is a letter from Sabrina Yorde.
Mm.
Maybe Yord. Like, that's how Lord, the singer.
Oh, Y-O-R-D-E?
O-R-D-E, yeah. Uh-huh. And we'll never be royals. Subject, greetings from Venezuela. Cool. And spooky, would you rather? Oh, great. Hey, Long Brothers, Max, Pearl, Maggie, and Turtles. Weird. Whoa, the whole gang.
Max and Pearl got billing over Maggie?
Yes.
Max and Pearl are our parents' dogs, for those confused.
Yeah, that's right. I should have clarified. I just assumed.
Everyone knows Max
so
and Pearl.
I forgot people were listening to this. My name is Sabrina. I'm 22 years old and live in Venezuela. I currently study public relations and I'm about to graduate next year. Congratulations. Your podcast and Anna Faris's are the only ones I listen to, basically. Wow. I love your sense of humor and can't help relating to your dynamic and inside jokes. They remind me a lot of me and my best friends. I hope you're all taking care of yourselves. And as a fellow Beatlemaniac, LOL, I send you all my lovin'. All my lovin'. She didn't say that part. I added that. Could you tell? Heart emoji. P.S. Justin, my boyfriend looks a lot like you. Wow, lucky fella. And like you and Anthony Kiedis. He's sick and tired of my shit.
Wow.
Whoa. What does that mean? He's sick and tired of my
shit. She's probably saying that all the time to him.
That's her shit?
Probably.
Or her
or
general.
Maybe that's just...
She's sick and tired of my shit.
And it has nothing to do with what he looks like?
Maybe. Maybe not.
I think it's... I would suspect it's she's sick and tired. He's which sick means and tired he's not flattered of by hearing it. That he looks like you.
Yeah, he's not flattered by it.
Yeah,
because you don't get it was for, it was flattering. If somebody kept saying I look like Brad Pitt, I'd be like, oh, I wouldn't be sick of it ever.
You might be. Maybe. You don't know.
Laughing face emoji, crying laughing. Biggest compliment though. Oh, pics below.
Oh, not according to him.
No. And she sent pics, but I don't have them
I took
my...
a pic.
Oh, you did. Okay, yeah. Great. Well, I want to see what he looks like. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does. You know who he
is? He's a little bit like little Adam Driver.
Yeah. And there's somebody that I'm not placing, but God, who's...
Oh, I know. He looks a little like Max Minghella, doesn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. But he has we have similar wispy mustaches, which he's not going to like the sound of. That's not a compliment.
No, you do have similar mustaches because you both have that space in the middle where hair doesn't grow, see?
Yeah, he has a little bit of a Peter Berg overbite too, doesn't he? Like nice yes. Lips, he does.
He does have nice lips.
Yeah, he has great lips.
I hope he's not listening to this.
I hope he is. That's a compliment. Why wouldn't you take that compliment from especially from...
Two middle-aged men he doesn't know complimenting his nice pouty lips.
We know lips. I mean, we're into the lips.
I think he might be creeped out if you heard this.
Why? I'm not saying like I want to like make out with his lips. I even that shouldn't bother
but
him.
But talking about how nice his lips are is a little
objectifying.
Definitely objectifying. Well, she's but saying also a little unsettling, maybe.
But she sent the picture in order that
I know it's her fault. It's only gonna make him give her more shit.
Yeah, and be tired of her shit.
Oh right.
Yeah, he'll grow even more tired of that shit. Is that an attractive guy, though? I'm flattered by the comparison.
You should be.
Okay, here we go. Would you rathers, number one, end up having Wallace's fate in Tusk or Derry's fate in Jeepers Creepers?
That's
for the rest
Wallace
of your life?
Okay. Is your character?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, in Tusk, Tusk is a movie for the majority of you who haven't seen it about a Vincent Price maniacal old man who turns my character into a walrus, basically. It's, it's like a body mutilation movie. And then Jeepers Creepers, I mean, this is tough because it's kind of like what we were talking about the other day.
So it's would you rather become the walrus or you die at the end of, spoiler alert, Jeepers Creepers.
That's the thing. It's like would you want to live as a – but just to – so people can think about it, in Tusk, I lose my – my tongue is taken out. My arms are. I'm put into this. I'm sewn into the spoiler alert. I'm sewn into the body of this walrus.
But where? So you become a walrus basically. But where do you live in a zoo or something, right?
Yeah, and my girlfriend, played by Genesis Rodriguez, ends up getting together with I think Haley Joel Osment's character, my best friend. And so I have to see them. They come to visit me, and they throw.
So you're in a zoo. I'm trying to imagine what the
What the life would be.
Yeah,
it's in a little pen. I have a little like.
Are you fed tank. Good food?
Mackerel and stuff.
Oh, like raw fish and stuff.
Yeah,
well, I would do Jeepers Creepers.
You'd rather.
I wouldn't want to live like that.
Yeah, that'd be really hard. I don't think I could get used to that life
no.
after living as a human for so long.
What is there another one?
Have sex with the creeper, or have sex with Howard Howe. Jeez,
who's that?
He's the character that the late great Michael. Michael Price plays.
Michael Parks.
Sorry, Michael Price.
Wait, would you rather have sex with Michael
for
Parks?
For family.
Michael Parks or the Creeper?
Yeah. Oh, and they said Howard Howe dressed as a walrus, of course. These are very specific to as many times as they please. This is so weird.
The Creeper, I guess.
Really? I don't know. It seems...
The Creeper only because it's not...
Be more
not an old man. And it would be such a different kind
it's
of...
It's a monster. It's a
I know, but
aggressive.
It's a different kind of experience. So I wouldn't even associate it with having sex with a human.
Right. I know. Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do either.
Yeah. Okay. Third. Turn someone else into Mr. Tusk or gouge and eat someone else's eyes. Good Lord, Sabrina. Good Yord. Good. These are crazy. Turn someone else into Mr. Tusk or gouge any. Again, Mr. Tusk is the walrus character. Okay.
So basically, do the thing.
Yeah, yeah. I would not want to do that to anyone, Mr. Tusk. I would to gouge any. These are really hard. You know, I would gouge and eat someone's eyes. I would say that one only. It's faster. It's less. I hate to say this. It's less abusive.
Yeah. I think in part because it's faster. And I think there's something more abusive just in the length of time it takes to turn someone into a walrus.
Oh, also, I found a way around the most tragic element of it. If you were able to pick the person, and you could pick somebody who already can't see. So their eyes are of no real use to them already. It'd still be awful to gouge somebody.
Yeah, I don't think. If I had to guess, Sabrina would say, no, it's got to be a person who
can
see.
If I knew Sabrina.
Yeah.
Okay, well, those are truly awful. Thank you, Sabrina. but, you know, Halloween themed. I know it's past Halloween now, but it's still, you know, the time. The ghouls are still in the air. Oh, we can still do that voice. It's the holiday season. Yes, until the next vernal equinox. Okay, well, thank you, Sabrina. And thanks to Sabrina's lover for putting up with her, what she thinks are flattering.
His expression in this picture looks like, knew that she was taking a picture of him in order to submit it to this podcast.
Yep. He looks over it. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's tired of hearing that.
So thank you to Sabrina. And if you guys would like to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
And thank you so much to the great, my favorite, I'm going to say it, my favorite comedian.
Wow.
I think he is Bill. I mean, Bill Burr's up there. He's one of my favorites.
But if you say that now, if you have another great comedian, like if Jerry Seinfeld comes on the show.
Right.
I won't let you say he's my favorite.
Okay, so he's one of my favorites.
Okay.
The legendary, I can say that.
Yes.
He's a legendary comedian and a great actor. So go see his movie, The Dark Divide. I think it's wide. I think you can see it. It's streaming somewhere. And just the stories of him, the harrowing experience of shooting it. Aren't you curious? Just based on that to see
it. Yes, very curious.
So thank you to David and everyone listening.
And we'll talk to you next week.
And stay tuned for a voice memo.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long.
Not again.
It's co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
And also produced by
Megan Monaco.
Senior producer is Michelle
Meesh
Lanz. Two executive producers on
audio
this one.
Audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Executive producers are...
Speaking of executive producers, we got Marshall Louis and Hernan Lopez for Company, and the name of which escapes me, I believe you know.
Wondery.
Bye.
Everyone, this is Alvin. I hope you enjoyed listening to the podcast. Christian, I had fun listening. And Margaret, what about you? Did you like the show?
I liked it.
You don't have to force your voice up to make it go higher, because the app does that.
Oh, that's my real voice, though.
Sorry, didn't mean to shame you. See you next week, everyone.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.